TV Corner.
Hey guys, welcome to Film Core's TV Corner podcast for Game of Thrones. This is season 6, episode 2, titled Home. I have Greg and TJ with me this time.
Hey everyone.
And we're just going to hop right into the episode. Right, so we open up with Bran becoming Han Solo'd, or Anakin Skywalker'd.
I think Luke, probably the apt description. He's I'm kind of underwhelmed so far by Bran. I thought he would be a little further along, honestly. He came in, he's doing some cool stuff going back into the past before even he was born. But other than that, I don't really think...
Yeah, totally. I mean, the one nugget we did get is that apparently Hodor once was pretty normal.
You might have to find out what Hodor is now that it's not
name. That's actually, I didn't consider that. Yeah, totally true. Like, why is he saying Hodor? What, is he traumatized? Maybe Hodor has pledged to never talk again. We don't know. But I think it's definitely going to be something super, I think it's going to be something related to kind of like what happened to Lyanna and maybe what happened with, maybe even, Ned's brother dying in King's Landing.
Do we know how much time has passed?
I'm not quite sure on the exact timeline, but I think it's just been a few months.
Enough time for them to swap out the old guy with
Max. Yeah. Yeah.
long enough for a recast.
Yeah, I mean, I think that recast might have actually gone unnoticed by a lot of fans, but I mean, they have a good choice.
Yeah, it leads me to think that there's going to be, that it's going to be one of the top storylines of this season, just because of that casting.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and I think inevitably we're going to get a reveal in the Tower of Joy and get some backstory in that, which I think is super interesting because the book has not reached that point yet.
Some actual uncharted territory.
Yeah, which is what's happening with the show right now in general. They're just kind of teetering on the edge of how far do we push past what people already know. Let's move into the Iron Islands. A Greyjoy is killed. A King's Moot will begin. And Yara assumes that she's going to be next in line, and they're like, nah, like, we're definitely going to have the American Idol version of this.
Yeah, she was not prepared for that answer. I don't know why, if that's their culture, I can't see why that would be the case.
They have not had a King's Moot in a very, very long time.
Is it only because she's a daughter and not a son?
It may be argued that that it technically was because a woman has not ruled the Iron Islands, that naturally it would normally just go to the next like male heir. Mm-hmm. Technically that'd be Theon, but Theon technically is not in play.
By their standards, he's not a man anymore, right?
Right. He can't.
Yeah, exactly.
He can't produce an heir.
I mean,
he definitely have a hard time doing it.
Looking up for her, or not looking up for her necessarily, but I think that she's got a good shot.
I guess we'll see. I mean, I think they did like kind of a weird setup for this entire situation with the Iron Islands because we didn't really spend a lot of time with them, and the whole relationship between her, her father and Balon Greyjoy and Euron Greyjoy was kind of complicated, and they really don't touch on that enough. So they kind of have that weird meeting on the bridge where you see that there's an obvious, literal symbolic struggle for power. And, just have to see what happens with the King's Moot. I wish they would have maybe spent some more time getting us, I don't want to say like in the mindset of understanding what the relationship dynamics were, but I think it was a little rushed.
Definitely. We don't know what's going on there. Clearly, Euron didn't appear in the next scene, I don't think, right?
He was cut in the face. So that would have been a dead giveaway to, hey, there was obviously some sort of struggle. So I think he was in his best interest not to show up.
Yeah.
It's not like a might makes right kind of thing.
And they're pretty might makes right about everything. So who knows?
Do we understand that Balon was even a bad ruler necessarily?
That he was a bad ruler, but I think we could take away that he was more, imperialistic than people would have liked, establish all these footholds in the lands, and everybody seems pretty content.
Yeah, as Yara
with,
points
like,
out,
sea,
like we can't hold land, so there's really no point in us wasting time or resources to try and do so. Yeah,
but he's respected. He's respected amongst the people, which number one.
Just have to see where it goes with Euron. I mean, I really don't understand what his. I mean, besides, I guess being in power. Possibly through this King's Moot, there really seems to be no reason why he'd want to overthrow Balon.
I mean, the bigger thing for me is who cares, right? Unless they're going to tie this to everything else that's happening in the show.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, what it felt like. We just haven't really spent any time in the Iron Island, so our level of caring, or, you know, we have no investment in any character at this point. All right, and moving on to a place where we spend a lot of time, King's Landing. Sir Robert Strong just smashing a guy's head against the wall. Probably the best kill I've ever seen in this show. Like, I don't...
Oh, so nonchalant.
In some way, it was so gory and so terrible that it was beautiful.
Such a golem, like, he just appears when someone's, shit-talking the queen. He's just a...
I don't know who makes that sound either, but that crunch was perfect.
The brain matter falling off the wall, oh my god, that was...
But yeah, she's got, I mean, perfect. So she must have some word out. Like, don't talk shit about the queen.
Cersei has plenty of informants. Just don't talk shit, because you're gonna get hit.
That's it. That's the new Lannister motto.
We can also see that there's, like, between, like, kind of like the King's Guardsmen, when Cersei's trying to attend Marcella's funeral, that they also don't trust Sir Robert Strong. So he's apparently, you know, just kind of like Cersei's shadow, and there's a lot of tension there as well.
They were definitely trembling in their boots to fight him. It was,
Yeah, definitely. Moving into, just quickly touching on that, Marcella's funeral. High Sparrow comes in, talks to Jaime. I expected Jaime to just stab him there, but there was definitely some reinforcements in hiding in the wings. So inevitably, there's definitely going to be a physical face-off between the crown and the faith.
Failed threat there. That was pretty non-subtle. You know, he just straight up told him, "You can kill me, but
yeah,
I'm going to kill you if you try. We're going to overthrow this empire."
I always,
you know,
think about the High Sparrow being kind of like the Bernie Sanders of, like, King's Landing. That's just me.
Oh, no, there's plenty of memes going on now.
Yeah, and one thing we do have to worry about is Tommen has now asked Cersei for more guidance. We all know that Cersei's insane, so I think we're going to see a lot more bloodshed, a lot of nonsensical actions.
Mm-hmm. I think that's my prediction for what goes on there. Cersei's going to take Tommen and... like, lead him to take the fight to the faith. There's not going to be in there.
Guys, I really didn't know. I mean, I didn't expect you guys to be this religious. I didn't think that you would. I'm shocked that you guys have no sympathy for the Lannisters now. Because I thought to myself, like, oh, that's kind of a cool thing. They've made them the victims now. It's like they're the underdog, basically.
That is, I mean, that's what this actually the show does really well. Is like you're able to sympathize with even the most like evil of characters, and I love that duality. Like, yeah, like Cersei's a terrible person, but you know when she finds Marcella's dead, or when you see that she's like confined to her room, you do feel sympathetic. You know, you cheer for Robert Strong even though he's a monster. But at the same time, it's also hard to completely like feel like the faith is they're the villains, because they do have strong points. Like the crown has been just like fucking around for years,
right? And you know, if the crown gets their power from anywhere, it's from the gods, or it's supposedly from the gods. So you know, the fact that they have no respect for the gods kind of makes their claim to the power kind of moot.
But you call you call her evil, and I don't. I think what I like about at least the show for so many seasons is that I don't think it is that simple. I don't think there are, I mean, I barring like the was it the Night's King and the sort of the ice zombies coming from the north, any human that we meet isn't really evil. I mean, maybe, you know, they sort of, it's a little problematic how they treat like the slavers, but even with the slavers, right, like they find a way to humanize it, and then not all of them were bad, that it's systematic. I mean, a lot of the criticisms I think in the show are about systems, and the Lannisters are always kind of interesting because they have their own little rules for themselves, and they don't really Like put it this way. I mean, if Cersei's foes didn't happen to be the most popular characters in the show, I don't think she'd be the evil one. But because we love Tyrion, because we loved Ned Stark, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, she just gets positioned against these people that we love.
But why do we love these people? I think we love these people because, you know, like Tyrion especially, you can see his good side. He's always seems to be defending the right ideals, or I don't know, I guess ideals?
Going back into your earlier point about kind of like the Night's King, do we even know that they are for sure evil? We don't even know what they're trying to accomplish. So therefore, to that point, we don't even know like what, maybe this fact that like man is trying to stop them is, man's can be considered the bad guys. Like, we don't know.
Well, they're evil in the way that like locusts are evil when they come and destroy a town, right? By eating all the crops. I mean, they're evil because they exist beyond ethics. They eat. They just move. It's like cancer.
I would argue,
you know,
back
it's unclear
into
who's,
the idea of like what makes someone selfish or someone evil might be the fact of how selfish they are. You can point to, certainly Cersei does things to kind of cover her own mistakes and does it to the extent of, you know, harming whoever she has to, or protecting her children to the extent of she doesn't care who, you know, gets killed along the way, which some people might find that, you know, reasonable and would say, I would do the same things if my family was in jeopardy. But yeah,
but
like
having the children of the king, the illegitimate children of the king killed, that was...
Yeah, that doesn't make it right. You know what I'm saying? That makes it worse. The fact that you did something so wrong and now are trying to cover up your mistake by hurting other people is not honorable. And that, therefore, I think that makes her evil. It makes, like many characters, makes her extremely flawed.
Yeah, I will give you that. The characters are extremely complex, which is what makes the show good. You know, they're definitely you have to give a nuance. You have to have, everybody has to have a nuanced view of each character, where you see their flaws and you see their strong points, and you can judge them based on that. With Cersei, I find myself siding with Cersei on certain things, and definitely Jaime. He's become kind of one of my favorite characters on the show. You know, even though we know after what he did to Bran, and he's still got a high place in my mind just based on who his character is and who he's become over the course of the series.
Sure. Well, he's got that great bathtub scene, right, with Brienne, that sort of changed everyone's perception of him. But I think what's so great about that character is that he's a sort of silent hero, and it's because the world disappointed him to turn him into a monster. And I think in that same way, Cersei, you know, operates. So when she's doing these things, she sees it as sort of like a life vengeance that she's taking out on what is a deeply flawed and broken system around her, which obviously, yeah, like, you know, the examples that we've been given, it's, you know, there's been some horrible things she's done, make it harder. But I find myself like, I think this season we find a little bit of a redemption for Cersei, by the end of it. I mean, I think, especially as we sort of start pushing away from the everyday, people politics of the show, and we start moving towards more into this fantastical space with the dragons and with, you know, the magic that's always been there but now is really in the forefront. So I'm super psyched to sort of hang out in King's Landing and see what happens there, and see like how she, I mean, maybe she finds a way to redeem herself in her treatment of Tommen, which would be really cool.
Yeah, we definitely saw a small change in her when Tommen came to her and asked her for help. You know, we saw that she seems kind of resigned to the fact that all her children are going to die, but, you know, now she seems like, all right, we could do this together, you know, and that kind of gave me a little bit of hope for her as well. But I definitely get your criticism about the systemic problems of the land that we're dealing with. That's definitely a valid point.
Okay, right on. And let's move along to the east. Marine, Tyrion just frees the dragons. Nothing too crazy happened there. You guys have any points you want to touch on?
I thought it was a great scene, yeah, but it didn't really give us much on what's going on in Marine. Like, they didn't even eat. Like, that's what he went in for.
Yeah, we just got the hint that Slaver's Bay is lost and has kind of reverted to the old ways, so all the work they've done up to now has kind of, you know, now been in void. I think everything's going to kind of continue to decline until Daenerys returns. Or I'm not sure what direction it's going to go in, because it seems like things aren't getting any better. I don't know what their plan for, you know, rehabilitating the area, but I don't know if they're going to be able to progress to this point. I mean, I feel like we spent so many seasons on the fact that, like, Slaver's Bay just wants to have slaves that I'm kind of, I don't want to say bored with the storyline, but I really would like this to move forward.
Apparently, in the books, Martin really didn't know what to do with this and wanted to do like a 5-year cut, like a 5-year forward, basically, just skip some timing in there. So this was always, I guess, the hardest part for the showrunners to you know, bring to life. I think it's like 2 seasons too long already. and now we're going back to like basically a reset, you know, which is, at this point, whatever they do, I think, is going to feel really forced, you know, to try and move things back
yeah,
along.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I've played with a few things about Daenerys maybe returning with the Dothraki army, like maybe the dragons come back and destroy the rest of Slaver's Bay. I mean, there's really no, like, I couldn't think of any kind of plot device that really would feel natural, to your point, and that would add anything to the story. Anything at this point that we get, I feel like would just push us forward, but won't add anything. We're not going to be, like, super...
Well, it would... Like, okay, if she goes back and suddenly retakes all the cities, it suggests, like, a naivete about the rules of this world that so far this show has never ascribed to.
Yeah.
You know, like, she is naive, she's idealistic, she believes in something that we kind of, I mean, she, you know, talk about Bernie Sanders. I mean, she's the Bernie Sanders of the show, right? Like, she's the one who does what she thinks, lives with a code that doesn't live by the politics around her. That's why we have Tyrion there, who's sort of the guy who gets how to, you know, he knows how to get things done. And we keep finding that actually she, you know, at least up to this point, her way doesn't get you very far. And in fact, it leaves you in the same city for 3 seasons.
I mean, Tyrion definitely is more educated in the rules of ruling. You know, she hasn't really been in a situation where someone's actually, you know, teaching her what to do. She has some advisors, but they've never been, you know, she just hasn't had someone who's had to, you know, like, balance a budget necessarily, or had to, you know, like, be as diplomatic as Tyrion has had to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tyrion is definitely that kind of mentor that she definitely needed these past 3 seasons. And now that he's there, she's not there, so it's a little frustrating.
Yeah, we had these high hopes for Daenerys coming in when she was first coming up, and she marched across, you know, the lands, and she was supposed to be this amazing white savior that came in and fixed all the problems out there. But yeah, we haven't seen any progress, and I think that whole storyline is probably going to need to be restructured in order to move forward.
Yeah, while we're in the East, let's just hit on Braavos. Arya promoted from unpaid intern, so moving on up. Interesting. Well, I'm excited that didn't take as long as I thought it was going to.
Oh yeah. That was such a square one moment in the first episode, and now at least she's back in the house.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just still very interested to see, you know, if she truly becomes a faceless warrior or if she still just holds on to her past. I don't know what the reaction would be necessarily if she decided she didn't want to be, you know, faceless anymore. Or maybe her character chooses to mature and let go of the past, you know, things that have happened to her and truly wants to move forward with a fresh start.
For a basic story, it would be really, really boring if she's just becomes an unnamed person and doesn't ever reconnect with the rest of the main storyline, right? Or no, is that something you guys would be into?
No, I mean, I'm torn between both. I mean, it'd be nice to see some, like, crazy character growth like that from her. But at the same time, like, we know that Needle is still hidden, so a part of her is still always going to be out there, especially with the rest of her family still existing. So I'm just, like, really interested to see, like, how she's truly faced with the task of, you know, like, really relinquishing everything completely. Because I think a part of her still remembers, you know, everything that's happened. And she's very afraid to give that up. And I think, I don't know what their reaction would be, the other faceless men, if she decided to say, whoa, actually, you know what, I don't want
to
do this.
Yeah, and there's this, you know, there's something to speak, that speaks to if she does become a faceless assassin or whatever. She could have, well, she could be a pawn in shaping the future of, you know, the whole Seven Kingdoms, so.
And things coming to a head or a stab to this tummy. Let's move into Winterfell, where I totally predicted this. I don't think anyone, this was not a surprise. As soon as we find out that Fat Walda is having had a boy, and the look on Ramsay's face was just, oh my god. It was so awkward.
Yeah. It was over with. We knew it was over with.
I didn't think it was going to happen in that scene, but...
yeah.
Well,
but, yeah, I mean, I thought maybe like a little poison at night, you know, to...
Right.
Well, I think that was... What I actually was actually enjoying was when... Roose was like, you'll always be my first son. That to me was actually a really nice sentiment. And he was like saying to Ramsay, you have nothing to worry about. You're still number one. That's what I felt like he was saying. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you are the heir. I have another son, but just, you know, it's fine. And then.
That's. It just didn't seem to be enough for Ramsay. No. You know, it wasn't enough of a consolation. He's like, he had to ensure it, and he did it right then and there.
You would think that Roose would maybe have expected that. Like, he didn't think, like, Ramsay might kill him. I mean, he knows that his son is a maniac, so it's just like...
Yeah, he even called him a wild dog in that scene, so it just seemed he knew what was going down. I found the Karstark's reaction pretty strange. Like, maybe it was planned out. Like, he was... in the room watching it happen, no reaction.
Well, I think
whatsoever.
The Karstarks are mostly motivated by the fact when Rob killed his father during the Battle of the Five Kings, that they seem to be really salty about that still. But it seems kind of odd to me that they'd be so willing to back the Boltons, since the Boltons are like hated by everyone in the North, and they're like, you know, they're like the Trumps of the land, like, so no one likes them at all. So it seems kind of weird they'd hold on to that grudge for so long. Because Ramsay's like, oh, we should go, you know, kill Jon Snow. I mean, the Karstarks are all about, you know, killing all the Starks, so.
Do you guys feel like this is basically the end of Ramsay?
Oh,
After feeding a woman and her baby to his dogs, I feel like there's very little they can do to show him more as a horrible person. So I kind of feel like we're at the end of the line with Ramsay. It's going to be...
In a way...
Yeah, it's going to be like a couple more scenes of him leading an army or whatnot. And I think we're, you know, there's no... Like, we're done seeing old women with their skin peeled off. Or... what else did he do? I mean...
A lot of everything. Name
it was like, I feel like, season 3 was like, every episode.
The rape, the castration. You know, I think Roose might have foreshadowed that. He was going into talking about if you put up a reputation as a wild dog, you know, you're going to be put
down.
That's true. And he didn't even hear that
shit. What I
kind of
felt was actually a little disappointing. I felt like early in the introduction of Ramsay as a character, we understood that, this guy is really deranged, extremely violent, but he seems to be motivated by honoring his father and really wanting to become a Bolton and uphold the family name. And it just seems kind of like, well, you just kind of threw all that away when you killed your father. And I guess there's no reasoning with someone who's, like, as insane as Ramsay is.
It's always a little bit problematic when a villain's only goal is to have power. Because power in itself is nothing, right? Unless you apply it to something. And it's really unclear what he wants.
Exactly.
Having him as this, as a wild dog is fine. But there's really only one logical outcome, which is to have him put out. Unlike Tywin, who had legacy, he had all these things that
he lived
by.
Legacy. He was calculating. He was respectable. Like, you could hate him, but you also respected him as a as a leader. Yeah, I don't see anybody respecting Ramsay. I don't see him seizing the love of the people after, even if he comes into power. Like, no one's gonna love him. He's gonna be dealt with.
Also, to Greg's point about kind of like about Tywin, it was also nice to see someone who had, like you mentioned, like who was calculating and really thought, you know, seven steps ahead. And I feel like Ramsay is not doing that. I feel like you kind of lose a lot in the show as far as, you know, plot building, because you don't get these, the multitude of layers of, like, things happening in relation to each other and how he's trying to play other characters off each other. He just is very like, okay, I don't like you right now, I'm killing you. Not like, let me hold on to this moment and kind of calculate when I can make this chance, you know? Like, it would have been nice if Ramsay had even staged another incident where Roose is killed, you know? So he looks less guilty. Or, like, you know, just maybe an accident with Fat Walda. Like, that would have been more interesting than just, let me stab Roose, let me just feed Walda to the dogs. Like, also, why does anyone keep walking into that kennel? Like, no one is waiting for you in that fucking kennel. Like, why do they keep doing this? It's really so miss, far. You know, like, that little fingered betrayal in season one where he tells Ned Stark, I told you not to trust me. Mm-hmm. You don't need gore to have those gut-wrenching moments, you know? Just, like, a clever plot twist where people just, you know, there's such deception that just makes for great storytelling. And I feel like we miss a lot of moments that we miss the chance to have these moments a lot this season. And we're only two episodes in.
Well, I was honestly really disappointed that Roose gets off, because Roose has been one of the smarter villains in the show. And to see him just take it like that, I mean...
Exactly. I mean, he was the power player, like one of the big power players behind like the Red Wedding. So you want to see like something that right. level like happen to him. And that's it.
Yeah, he was in the Red Wedding, and watching him the entire time was just excruciating, because you knew what he was up to, you know? Or you didn't know exactly what he was up to, but you knew something was coming, and he had his fingers all in it. And it was hard to watch, but it made him, like, a very interesting character.
Right? I mean, I really missed the long cons we used to get.
Same.
Right on. And then another con in Winterfell. Big reveal, or not so big reveal, because I think we all kind of basically felt like that was gonna happen. It was inevitable.
I think it was cool. I think the way they did it was awesome. I didn't expect this much self-doubt from.
I thought you were gonna say you didn't expect to see so much of Kit Harington's abs, but pleasantly surprised.
Oh no, yeah. I expected that.
Yeah,
I really wish they hadn't cut when they did, because is he gonna just like wake up? Does he remember what happened to him? Is he gonna put clothes on? I mean, if someone else sees him, aren't they just gonna try to immediately kill him? They're gonna assume that he's like a White Walker. I think if you see someone dead that you knew has been dead for 2 days, that your initial reaction is not gonna be like eye inspection. It's gonna be like, I need to.
No, he's just a walker. Yeah.
Just a walker.
I just want to see Ollie's face. That's all. That's the main reason I'm going to sit down next week to watch this episode, is to see Ollie's face and hopefully a stern talking to, or, you know, a grounding forever.
Grounding.
Yeah, does he just walk up and slap him really hard?
Yeah.
What if he just, like Robert Strongs him? Actually, is that too graphic to want to happen to, like, a 13-year-old? Right on. Let's move into some predictions, thoughts about the show. Greg, how are you feeling right now?
I mean, I think we've touched a little bit on, I think there's like a simplification going down, and I think I mentioned to you guys before that I'm hearing from a lot of people that they're not as into this season so far, and it's granted it's only two episodes, but I think there's definitely like a palpable change in quality, and it probably has to do with the fact that they're going off book, and these guys now have to very quickly tighten this world up, because it's only going to be less than 30 episodes left, according to the news, according to the showrunners, and you have things like Euron throws Balon off a bridge really quickly. Roose just gets knifed, and we sort of very quickly move on, right? And these characters that were very important are now just sort of out. And beyond that, like, this show was sort of famously pitched as Sopranos meets Game of Thrones. No, Sopranos meets Lord of the Rings. And for a lot of people, and I know for myself, what initially drew them in was the sort of the Sopranos part of that equation. Yeah. And the very human sort of aspects of it, and the betrayal, and the alliances, and the good characters doing bad things, and bad characters doing good things, you know. And always in the background was that magic, you know, was the mystical stuff, which we're going to hard, like that's gonna be how the show wraps up. And I think a lot of people are sort of slowly maybe thinking that, you know, oh, I, you know, I've been watching a show about dragons for 5 years and I that's not really what I you know, what I was actually into.
Yeah, oh, that's actually very interesting. Not the idea that maybe the show is maybe letting people down as far as, you know, writing style or just like, you know, editing, cinematography, the fact that people weren't necessarily prescribed to such a fantastical world, you know? So that when as soon as it becomes more fantasy, that's when they're like, oh, wait, I'm actually not into all this magic. I just really like to see a lot of backstabbing and have that drama, but not... I don't want to watch Harry Potter, basically.
Right. No, that's like one of the main objections I heard when I was, you know, over the past 5 years trying to convince people, hey, you should watch this show. You know, oh, isn't like dragons and fantasy and stuff? And I'm like, no, there's so much more to it. It's about the characters. I feel like if I were to get somebody to watch the episodes so far this season, I wouldn't be able to back that claim up. You know, it's a lot of, you know, dragons and raising people from the dead, which is cool. I love it, but...
yeah, I mean, look, you know,
it's gotta be deeper.
Yeah, and if like I'm gonna finish watching it. You know, if it has jumped the shark, I'm gonna keep watching it until it's done because, you know, I've already invested myself in it. But there's a real stakes problem, and I think Armani mentioned this in the first time we spoke. But there's a real stakes problem when you want us to care about like a family and their dynamics, right? Two brothers, like, and one's a dwarf, and what the other one has always looked out for the other one. You know, I mean, the most touching parts of the show, or the scenes, set pieces where we've really grown to care about these characters, are suddenly made irrelevant if really the show is about some very stark evil coming from the north and coming down to obliterate everybody.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, when it's easier to care about, I don't want to say tertiary characters, but just like, you know, more human characters in general, when they're, you become less grounded in reality. And
I think
our point that we made earlier, now things are kind of wrapping up in a more cliche way. So when you get like, oh, like, you know, clear cut roles of who's good, who's bad kind of thing, then it makes the story overall less interesting. And it becomes more of, okay, like, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. There's less double crossing. You know, when you have such easy picks like Ramsay, obviously evil. When before, some could argue that, oh, he's just a bastard that wants to move up in the world. That it definitely takes a lot, it takes away from a lot of things, and it's, you know, I mean, ultimately, it's, unless we truly believe that George would let, like, the Night's King win, then, like, we already know the story, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I think, going back to what Greg was saying, the show is about the characters from day one, and, what we see now, we see, like, now that the reins have turned over and we're going into that uncharted territory, I mean, it just seems like they're really efficiently shaping up a landscape for maybe the end of the story. And they're not doing it, you know, carefully or with any type of savvy. It's just kind of like kill, 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 you stay, you're doing this now, you're a bad
guy. Yeah, they're just bulldozing through characters and just clear the path.
Like, we're gonna wrap this shit up now. I feel like that's how
I mean, that's I how think, it's yeah, going, to yeah. that point also, I think that it's the show feels very like, let's spend 4 minutes with this group and let's spend 4 minutes with this group because everyone's also so separated. It was super fun when everyone was kind of in King's Landing together and they were all playing off each other that way. But now that everyone's, you know, all spread out, it's just like, okay, now we have all these characters alone. We have to catch up with each one of them. We don't really get to see their interactions.
Totally. I would definitely pay good money for a box set of supercuts of every character's storylines up until this point. You know, just like, oh, this one's Tyrion. And you just watch all of Tyrion's stuff for like 3 hours. It'd be great. It would let you see
I would binge that so hard.
Yeah, absolutely. It would just let you see all those cool interactions that were happening between the characters that just really isn't happening anymore. You know, you don't see it. Like Jaime and Tyrion haven't exchanged words for like what, 3 seasons now, and you know, for good reason. But that was one of my favorite relationships. You know,
I mean, where's Littlefinger? That's all I want to know.
Yeah, what is he doing?
Just doing some slimy shit probably in the Vale, but I want to know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, get some updates on him.
So yeah, so right on, guys. Well, I think that wraps up our this episode's podcast. I hope you guys listen to us next week for episode 3. And thank you guys for doing this.